This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. We're going to talk about the benefits of mindfulness today. And with us is Shyla Mergane. She is a distinguished psychologist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health, and she specializes in adjustment issues and mood and anxiety disorders. We'd like you to be part of our conversation, too. So what would you like to know about being more mindful? Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Shyla, it's so good to have you with us again.
Thanks so much for having me, Jill.
So we hear so much about being mindful, but I think it's gotten to the point where we've kind of forgotten what that is. So what is being mindful? The basics.
I think that's such a great point. It's become such a buzzword. It's kind of like a McMindfulness, you know, that it's gotten yes. very consumerized. And I think we forget the simplicity of the practice and how profound it is, you know. And I think especially now in a world that's grown so weary, seeing tragedies, the recent tragedy in Uvalde, the war in Ukraine, that many people have felt a sense of kind of feeling very sad and down and a sense of hopelessness. And it's really the power of mindfulness, of really connecting ourselves to the present moment, that way of really reconnecting to our core and that human connection with others that helps us stay resilient. And really, mindfulness is quite simply just being here now. Jon Kabat-Zinn, who's one of the researchers who's done some really seminal work in mindfulness, described it as paying attention in a particular way on purpose in the present moment. And I've heard him add, as if your life depends on it, because I really think it does. And so I'd like to talk with you today about kind of what mindfulness might look like in different ways for different people and the benefits of it and why it's such an important practice right now to really keep ourselves healthy and awake and aware right now in the world around us.
Yeah, it's certainly, we do have that hopelessness a lot of times hearing what's going on after, you know, 2.5 years of being on with worrying about the pandemic and it's still here. Well, give us an example of a way to be mindful.
Yeah, so I think, you know, so many of us get into a rut of just being on autopilot where we're going through the motions. We might be worrying about something that happened in the past or ruminating about something that could go wrong in the future, that we miss just the moments of our lives. And, you know, they say that we never wish on our deathbed that we spent more time at work or more time worrying, but yeah. We wish we had spent more time noticing like the sunsets or the smile of a child or expressing gratitude for the simple things that we have in our lives. And, you know, from my personal experience, about 15 years ago, I was at the celebration of the UW Mindfulness Program. I think they were celebrating their 20th anniversary, and they brought in a Zen calligrapher, Kaz, to Tanahashi, and he did these beautiful calligraphies using one brush stroke of different words like resilience and de-aging. And it was just captivating watching him, like somebody would give him a word like peace or a breath, and he would just in the moment take one brush stroke and dip his brush in paint and do this brush, beautiful brush stroke. And at the end, we got to commission a painting by him. And I walked up to him and said, oh, I would really love the word self-actualization. You know, that was my word that I wanted.
Oh,
I wanted
my
to become
goodness.
Self-actualized. And he looked at me and he said, no. And I said, no, you know, what's wrong with the word self-actualized? He said, no. And he had a furrowed brow and he dipped his brush in paint and he painted something and handed it to me. And he said, there. And I said, okay, what is this word? And he looked at me and he said, wake up. And I said, wake up. And he said, yes, wake up. And I got chills going through my body. And I think, again, when we talk about mindfulness, that notion of waking up to our lives, waking up to who we really are, this tremendous capacity we have in us, waking up to life around us so we don't miss those little moments. And mindfulness really is a way of being, and it's also a personal practice that we can work on. And I think it's really a little inner revolution against the things we're bombarded with, you know, all the the news coming at us, all the worries of the day coming at us, and it kind of reminds us about what's important in our life.
So what are the benefits of being mindful to us, both physically and mentally?
You know, and I think that's why mindfulness has been trending so much, because the benefits are profound. And there are, you know, doing a mindfulness practice is free and available to all of us. So it doesn't require spending a lot of money or having to have some complex procedure. So we find that mindfulness regularly can help us stay more resilient in terms of reducing anxiety, helping us reduce depression, improving stress management. So those are some of the psychological benefits that we see in as little as a couple of weeks of practice. We also see, and as we practice more, there are physiological benefits like lowering blood pressure, strengthening immune response, reducing inflammation, all those things that help us stay healthy during COVID in the midst of this pandemic. And also we find that there's the neuroplasticity of the brain, that our brain can change based on training. And we find that it improves working memory, that ability to focus and improves attention. Also helps us improve decision-making and have greater emotional control. And one of my favorite studies, they actually looked at the benefits of mindfulness on something called telomeres. At the end of our chromosomes, we have telomeres that as we age start to shrink. And so as those telomeres start to shrink, it indicates we're going to have a shorter life and potentially more disease. So there was a review of four different studies, and they found that after each group went through about 8 weeks of different forms of meditation, those telomeres were significantly longer, suggesting that people had, in fact, lengthened their life and made them less likely to have chronic illness.
And you mentioned meditation, and is meditation and mindfulness interchangeable? Are they two different things?
Oh, that's such a great question. Meditation, there are lots of different forms of meditation, and meditation has its origins in a lot of different religious traditions, including Buddhism. But mindfulness mindfulness meditation has come out of the work of Jon Kabat-Zinn, who I mentioned earlier, and it is quite simply trying to be in the moment through simple practices, such as using your breath as a way to really ground in the here and now, or doing a body scan where you're sensing all the sensations of your body and trying to unhook from some of that autopilot of your mind, or maybe doing an open awareness practice where you're just like panoramic vision, noticing life around you versus that tunnel vision that we often get hooked into.
So right here on the radio, why don't you tell us something that we could do? So if someone's listening right now and, you know, not driving or anything, but what can you do right now to simply be mindful? What's a simple thing to do?
Oh, great. And we can do this anytime, even in the car. Let's say I prefer people not actually be driving, but maybe at their next stoplight or stop sign. That might be, or if they're getting out of the car and turning off the ignition. So one of my favorite practices is just stop practice. To just pause, press the pause button and step out of that autopilot. And so it can be helpful to have a time or a cue that reminds you to do that. And so I invite people to even do this now. And you can, for example, if you're sitting, you can feel your feet on the ground, feet in the chair, and just take one breath and just notice that breath as you're breathing in and out. And just pausing, just stepping out of that autopilot of the mind, and just being present with that breath as it comes in and out. So that pause, the power of the pause, can help you not say things, for example, that you wish later that you didn't want to say.
Right.
It can also help you maybe before you're sending that angry email, maybe pausing and just taking a moment. Or it can also be helpful as you're transitioning from work to home, just taking that pause before you arrive in your house with your family to be more present.
And a lot of it has to do with how rushed we all seem to be and how many things we need around us. We need, you know, we need to have music. We need to have the TV on. We need to, you know, and we have our phones in our hands. And it's kind of a way of just stopping all that for a second, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think you made such a great point. There was a study a few years ago that said 73% of Americans felt information overload. And you think of what comes at us in a day, it's much more than our ancestors probably had in their lifetime. There's more information that's generated in a single day than, you know, even 20 years ago, probably was in the course of, I don't know, several months or a year. And so our attention is really a valuable commodity, and things are always trying to grab our attention. You know, in the workplace, for example, you can have all these emails coming at you and you can get into a reactivity or trying to just deal with what's coming at you. And I think that power of the pause allows you to reconnect to your core, to really determine what's important, and then choose your response. You know, some things maybe you ignore, some things maybe you postpone, and to really stay on track with what you value, what's most important. And that can be in the workplace, staying on track in terms of tasks you have to complete, but also I think in terms of relationships, you know, really being the kind of presence that fosters healthy connections. And then in our own lives, make sure we're staying on track with those values, those hopes and dreams, so we are taking action towards those goals that we have, and we're not just treading water through life.
Great. Excuse me. Great points. Well, we're talking about the benefits of mindfulness. What questions do you have? We've got open lines. Join in by calling 800-642-1234. Our on-air producer today is Clara Neipert, and Lee Rayburn is our technical director. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. After 11:45, we'll talk about the complexities of menopause. Right now, we're talking about mindfulness. And Shyla, actually, when you're talking about like menopause and other physical things that affect us, mindfulness can help in that too, can't it?
Absolutely. I think it can be a grounding force during life transitions. You know, often when we are faced with circumstances that are beyond our control or some of those life adjustments, we can really get hooked by a lot of negativity. I work at UW Health with pain issues, with people who've developed a chronic pain issue. And oftentimes, because pain is such a negative sensation, it can cause a lot of negative thinking in our lives. And certainly we all have faced the pandemic and some of the struggles there. And that challenge can also have us hooked by those negative thoughts. And these types of negative thoughts can be so sticky. They can, in a sense, take front and center stage in our minds and cause a lot of unnecessary suffering. And I think mindfulness is helps us step away from those thoughts. So when those thoughts hook us, it's kind of like a car driving past. It's like a little thought driving past. And when the thought hooks us, it's like we leap out the window and hang onto the car for dear life and let that thought or that car take us right where it's going. And mindfulness allows us to say, oh, there's a thought. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, oh, that's an interesting thought, or, oh, that's a loaded thought, or that's a unkind thought, and just letting it pass on by. So another practice is just to notice our thoughts, like those cars driving past or clouds going by or leaves going down a stream. And we can just place that thought on that cloud or leaf or car and just see it. And an analogy I love that the Dalai Lama shared, he says, when we allow our thoughts to have us versus us just having thoughts, it's kind of like we're on rocky seas in a little boat, you know, and those seas can capsize us or make it our lives really tumultuous. And he says, if you can just sink down to the bottom of the, it's quite quiet there. You can see the heavy seas. You can see the storms of life, but recognize that there's a you that's been you throughout it all. And it again helps us connect back to all those components within ourselves that can face that life adversity. It also allows us to maybe think outside the box so we can access resources outside of ourselves, the people who can help, the people who can support us to help us stay the course that we're charting.
That's a great image. I like that a lot. Brad in Glendale has a comment for us. Hi, Brad.
Yes. My wife and I have this beautiful gray cat named Grover, and he will sit on our kitchen our table, and he will simply fold his paws underneath him, and he will simply watch for like 10, 15, 20 minutes. And for the last several years, I join him. Oh. And I will simply, and I won't have thoughts. I won't have those little narratives that go on in your head. I simply observe, like Yogi Berra said, you can see a lot just by looking. And so I'll just meditate, and You'd be surprised. I see all the wildlife there and the various types of birds, and I don't think about it. I just notice it. Mm-hmm. And so Grover and I sit there, and I do Grovering.
I love that. I'm hoping you don't go up on the kitchen table, though, Brad.
No. I sit there at the kitchen table, and he's right there. He's just a delightful kitty, we've had him for 13 years. So anyway, that's a type of mindfulness for me. Mm-hmm. I just see all the stuff that's in our backyard. It's like, wow, there's all this in our backyard.
Wonderful. Thank you. What do you have to say about that, Shyla?
Oh, Brad, I love that, Grovering with your cat. And right, our four-legged friends can really be our Zen masters. And it sparks for me two different things. I worked with somebody who developed a mindfulness practice, and they said similar to what you were saying, Brad, that after they are doing mindfulness, they notice so many things during the summer. They said, this must be the most spectacular summer. You know, the sunsets, the fragrances, everything in bloom, the birds, the animals. And I said, no, it's not that this summer is unusual and so magnificent. It's that you're noticing it finally. And I know for myself, I have a puppy, Belle, and she's often a teacher for me that sometimes I'll take her for a walk and we're just at my own pace and we got to get done with the walk so I can get back to work. And somebody said, Shyla, you're missing the whole point. Let her be the guide. And so she'll stop and sniff. You know, she'll stop and greet somebody. She'll stop and take it around. And when I allowed her to just be at her own pace, all of a sudden I noticed so many more things. And I think, Brad, you're just showing some really creative everyday ways to bring mindfulness into your life. Just notice the life through your pet's eyes. They can often teach us so much.
Oh, they certainly can. We're talking with Shyla Morgain about mindfulness today. What do you do to make you more mindful of what's going on around you? Do you have questions about how you can do this and, you know, what's stopping you or what problems you have doing this? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. And you can also send us an email. It's ideas@wpr.org. We have an expert here. Now's your chance. So what happens when we're sitting down and we're going to be mindful, we're going to grow over here, but you know, our mind wanders because like, oh gosh, I really need to paint the ceiling or what have you. What do you tell someone who has a problem with that?
I say, great, you're doing this. That's mindfulness. So mm-hmm. That's actually, but I'm glad you brought it up, Jill, because that can be some of the barriers or things that derail people, is that when they sit down, they notice just how active their mind is. It's often referred to the monkey mind that swings from tree to tree, branch to branch. Or analogy I like to use is if you have a dirty pot and you soak it in water, all the crud starts to come to the surface until we can sweep it away. And so not to get discouraged, that's the point. And mindfulness really is about bringing your mind back to the moment. And so a simple practice might be using the breath as a focal point, an anchor that we use to really anchor us in the here and now. And we can notice, as you said, oh, I have to paint the kitchen. Your mind's wandering off, picking out paint colors in your mind. And then you notice, oh, my mind has wandered. Mm-hmm. Let me bring my mind back to the breath. And then maybe you start to think about a problem that happened recently. Oh, my mind wandered there. Let me bring it back to the breath. And what we're really doing is we're really training the neuronal connections in our brain associated with attention and focus. And so going back to that neuroplasticity of the brain and some of the research that shows in about 8 weeks of really doing practice, about 20 minutes of practice, we can see some of those changes in the circuitry associated with attention and focus. So, you know, in our culture, we spend a lot of time in physical fitness, going to the gym, maybe walking on the treadmill or lifting weights. And I think about this kind of practice when we notice our mind wandering and we just simply bring it back to the breath, bring it back to that focal point. That's actually strengthening our brain, like taking our brain to the gym.
Yeah, that's a good point. We tend to give up a little too much when things don't go exactly like they're supposed to after the first few tries.
Yeah, and not to. Yeah, and just to stay with it. You know, mm-hmm. It's really, the objective is just to notice our present experience, right? We're mm-hmm. not trying to have our mind go completely still. I think even the masters, the Olympians of meditation, don't even have that. It's to relate differently to whatever's unfolding within us. So we're noticing it, but not getting so hooked by it.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned earlier that mindfulness can help our relationships. Could you explore that a little bit more?
Absolutely. You know, I think in a couple different ways. We were talking earlier about some of those life transitions, and sometimes in our culture we can feel so alone, like, oh, I'm the only one going through this. And mindfulness can really help us tap into that sense of common humanity that others around the planet are going through this very same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're part of this collective of people struggling with different things, and I think that can help us feel that sense of social connectedness. I also think, secondly, it can really improve our relationships. We can see others beyond that narrative of what we're saying about them and what's wrong with them and what annoys us or what's triggered us, to more that how we're more alike than different. There's a great practice of called Just Like Me, where we see others in our lives as just like us, having the same hopes and dreams, pains and sorrows, joys and celebrations, and that at the common denominator, we're more alike than similar. And there was some really interesting research. Again, I think mindfulness allows us to, with those kind of components, to feel more compassionate and connected and bring more presence. And there was one study that found that when we are giving that kind of support, that caring and kindness towards others, we actually have healthier, longer lives. And I thought that was interesting, that we actually have that kind of health benefit of healthier, longer lives when we're giving support versus just receiving support. And so, again, mindfulness can help us, and we can practice this. This might be a little homework assignment for listeners to, next time we're in an interaction with somebody we care about, to really be present. Don't get into our head about our to-do list or even thinking about, what do I need to say next? Just take a moment, maybe take that breath that we've worked with, and just notice this person in front of you as a fellow human being. Get curious about what's going on with them. Really listen and put those phones away. There was a study that showed just the mere presence of a smartphone, even if it's turned off and upside down, not facing upwards, just the mere presence, people related feeling less socially connected during that conversation versus when the phone was put away.
That makes total sense. So that's a good tip. And we're talking about breathing. So are there certain, because some people like to have rules. What are the rules of the game when it comes to using breath to be mindful?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love using the breath because it's always with us.
Uh-huh.
And
hopefully.
It's always available, right? That's at the end of our lives, right?
Yeah.
And I also think it's kind of a, It's just a nice practice because we're breathing anyway. So using the breath as an anchor to really ground us. Again, this can be useful for feeling worked up, if we're starting to have some challenging emotions, or maybe our mind is starting to get to wander, or we're triggered by something, just using that breath to ground us. And often in our culture, we tend to breathe very shallowly. This is sometimes referred to as stress breathing or survival breathing, that kind of chest breathing where we're breathing just using that chest. And so I think with a mindfulness breath, we can also invoke and invite some physiological regulation just by just breathing slower and lower in the body. So sometimes it's nice when we're doing a breath practice of just putting a hand or two on our stomach. And as we're breathing in, just breathing and inviting in that slower and lower breath. So we're breathing in, that stomach can expand like a balloon filling with air. And as we breathe out, feeling that balloon deflating, our stomach going in. And it's always nice, if you can, to lengthen the out breath, because that's very calming for our physiology. As we're doing that breath practice, we might also scan the body just to see if there are any areas of tension that are unnecessary. In particular, in our culture, we can have text neck. We text so much, right? Our head is down. We can have a lot of tension
oh, yeah.
in that neck and jaw. So to see if you can allow the face to relax, the jaw to relax, even the back of the tongue to relax, that part, and then the shoulders to relax, sitting upright. And if we relax that part of the body, oftentimes that can really help our mind settle. If we're clenching our jaw, the tongue is up against the roof of the mouth, our mind might get into that that loop, that negative loop. But if we relax again, that face, that jaw, the tongue, oftentimes we feel a little more spaciousness in our thinking.
Yes, and I know I've done that myself. It's amazing just even the shoulders, how they just drop. And all of a sudden, things don't feel so bad as they did just a second ago. So for anyone who hasn't tried it, try it. It makes a big, big difference.
Yeah. And you can do it. I sometimes invite people just 10 breaths or a minute of breathing, or, you know, kind of work your way up to maybe 20 minutes at some point.
Now, let's talk about helping kids become mindful, because obviously they're under a lot of stress these days, a lot more than it used to be, apparently, from what I've been reading. How can we teach them to use these tools?
I'm so glad you brought that up, Jill, because there was a recent report that the CDC published talking about the level of emotional distress that teenagers in particular are facing, and kids in general during the pandemic, and having to do virtual schooling and so many things disruptive, have really suffered. We definitely have seen a rise in depression and anxiety, and even concerningly suicidality among our youth. So again, inviting and introducing a mindfulness practice into our young people's lives is really, really a wonder, and can really help them stay mentally and emotionally and physically healthy. So I think first you want to model it as a parent, or maybe you're an aunt or grandparent or a neighbor. So you want to make sure you have your own practice, and then two, to invite it into the family time, or into your interaction with that young person. A great time could be at bedtime to do, for example, a body scan, where you have the child just scan their body, and as they notice areas of tension, to just release it on the out breath. They can start with the top of the head down to the tips of the toes, and as they breathe in, just notice that body part. They can even talk about sensations they're feeling there. And then breathing out, just releasing tension. A really nice practice to put in there is to invite in some gratitude for their body. Like, thank you, arms, for allowing me to throw that baseball. Thank you, legs, for allowing me to walk to school. Thank you, belly, for allowing me to enjoy that that wonderful meal. And in a culture of a lot of eating disorders, that can really be helpful, of allowing kids to get back to their body. I think a second practice that can be really nice to do as a family, even start the day around the dinner table or after dinner, is a loving kindness practice, where you just wish yourself well, like, may I be well, happy, peaceful, and healthy, and then wish somebody else well, may you be happy, peaceful, well and healthy, and then wishing the whole world that kind of loving kindness. And I think, again, that can help children develop that sense of social connectedness, that sense of generosity, and really recognizing their place on the planet.
Yeah, great tips for helping our children. If you've got a question, or if you have a tip, please give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. So how do we use this mindfulness to deal with, like, stressful situations? You know, we're in something at work, or something, you know, even, you know, road rage. How do we use that?
It's funny that you mentioned the road rage, because I was working a few years ago with a group, and at the end of the 8 weeks of training, that was the one thing that one of the participants mentioned, that before the training, they did have road rage and swear at the drivers and raise their fists. And at the end of the 8 weeks, they actually were smiling and wishing that person well, and had a different attribution about that person's behavior. That, man, if they're in that much of a rush driving that aggressively, they must be having a much worse day than I am. So wishing them peace and happiness. And I think, again, it speaks to how mindfulness can help us step out of that narrative, that story we're telling about what's wrong or what's happening, and connected with a larger perspective. So I think when we think about using mindfulness for stress and resilience, I think the first thing we want to do is to calm our mind. We never make the best decisions when we're in that heightened place of overwhelm, when we're triggered by something, when we're seeing red with anger. And so mindfulness can help us just take a step back from it, and doing something as simple as just counting the breath. You might breathe in and count to three, and breathe out and count to three. And then increase the length. So breathe in, count to four, breathe out, count to four, breathe in, count to five, breathe out, count to five. Because when we're triggered by something, it's kind of like we're looking up at the night sky through like a straw. We don't see much of the night sky. And that's kind of that when we're angry or upset or triggered or stressed, it's like we just see that really tunnel vision. Mm-hmm. And I think that that kind of balanced breath practice, that counting the breath, can just help us cool off. So we all of a sudden see the vastness, kind of that night sky in front of us, that full complexity around us. So that kind of practice and just taking some time to re-regulate, find our center, really think about, okay, you know, in the midst of this, what is the best response? You know, what is the best way to proceed? And often we can't find that if our mind is really jumbled, if there's a lot of noise. And so we're quieting the mind and tapping back into kind of what is the best way to proceed or not proceed, maybe just letting it go.
And that's something that, again, comes with practice, doesn't it? Because it's so easy just to get angry and just, you know, do something without even thinking about it. But practice helps, right?
It does. And I think also in those moments, thinking about, okay, what do I want to be putting out there in the world? You know, do I want to be putting out more anger or resentment or stress or anxiety, or do I want to put out more love, gratitude, appreciation? And even thinking about in this situation, what is the silver lining? Is there one thing I can be grateful for? Is there a different way I can look at it? And I think in those times, it can be helpful, what I call back pocket moments, to think about times in the past when you've gone through something similar, but it turned out better than expected. And so you can bring that moment out of that back pocket, so to speak, and think about that. And maybe that can give you some insight into how to best proceed.
What are some other ways that we can use the mindfulness, but other practices to help with all the stress that's been going on in the world lately? What other tools do we need to have in our toolbox?
Yeah, I think a couple different ones. I think the first is mindfulness in everyday life. Like we talked about using the breath as an anchor, but we can use mindful eating, maybe enjoying that first cup of coffee or a meal, and really savoring, using all our senses, what we're drinking or eating. I think that's really beautiful. Mindfulness doesn't have to be stationary. We can do mindful walking or maybe mindful swimming or biking this summer. And again, just really trying to notice the sensations of the movement in our body. That could be a wonderful formal practice that we're doing. Also, I always am encouraging the work of Kristen Neff and Christopher Germer around self-compassion. That when things are tough, to offer ourselves the kindness and care that we often so generously give to others. So it could be if we're going through a really hard time, maybe it's a heartbreak, maybe it's a significant loss. Maybe I know during this time, many people are worried about finances and filling up their tank of gas, and it can feel really scary. So we might not be able to problem solve out of that, but sometimes just being with that fear, being with that overwhelm, like we would a child who was suffering. So it could be something as simple as saying words of kindness, like, oh, honey, this is so hard. Or maybe doing a physical gesture of kindness, like putting our hand on our heart or giving ourselves a little hug or holding our hand and just feeling that warmth that we're generating from within. Imagining some of that loving kindness, like, yeah, this is tough. And again, recognizing that common humanity, that we're not alone. Others are going through this too. Sometimes that can really help soften and soothe some of those aches and pains and help us just get through another day.
And as far as getting help from outside, are there apps, are there websites, books that you could recommend that would help?
Absolutely. I'm always referring people to various forms, and we fortunately live in a time where there's just a wealth of those. The Center for Healthy Minds at the University of Wisconsin with Dr. Richie Davidson, who's really one of the pioneers in research, they have a Healthy Minds app that's free and has been rated as one of the best free apps out there. So I'd really highly recommend that, and it's really based on a lot of the research that the center is doing. I also think the work of Jon Kabat-Zinn, our public libraries have a lot of his books and a lot of his CDs. So that's also a great resource. And then there are a couple other apps like Headspace, Insight Timer that people have found benefit to along with others. So I think it can be nice to have that as a resource. Also, the University of Wisconsin does offer the 8-week mindfulness-based stress reduction course that is affiliated with Jon Kabat-Zinn, who I've been talking about. So sometimes people do really want to do more of a formal training, and that can be a wonderful resource for people if they're local.
And are there places where you can actually go? I mean, usually, sometimes with yoga, for instance, you know, you have kind of a little bit of that at the end. Are there classes that you can take where you just go in and practice mindfulness?
You know, absolutely. You know, I think, as I said, UW Health offers one with the mindfulness program, but, you know, people are listening all across the state, if not across the country. So it might be worth just looking in your local community. As you mentioned, yoga studios sometimes have it at the end of the yoga class, but some yoga studios actually have meditation courses they're offering. Also, healthcare centers offer it. I know even our local community centers will offer it as well. So I think there's nothing like meditating with other people that can really help you cultivate a practice. And we call it a practice because, you know, it's not just, hey, I meditated once and I'm done. It's really a practice in a way of being. So receiving that kind of instruction from others, meditating with others as well, can really help you derive more benefit than just sometimes doing it by yourself. And certainly, you know, at this point in the pandemic, I think we're craving that kind of connection and community. So it can also be a great way to make new friends as adults.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Before we go here, I know that there's been a lot of, I don't know if a problem, but there's not a lot of trained professionals like yourself available to help as many people as they need it. And how does someone know when it's time to seek professional help or that they can do something themselves like mindfulness?
Yeah, well, you know, the other thing I wanted to say is that there are, because of the pandemic, there's mindfulness trainings that are done virtually as well. Before the birth of my daughter, I did a mindfulness birthing class, and there were people, the instructors were in Ireland and Maine, and there was somebody from Canada, a participant. So, you know, if we can't find something local, there are things nationally, if not internationally, we can do virtually. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of sometimes we need more than mindfulness, we need mental health. Mental health help. And so talking with your physician, reaching out to a behavioral health specialist, you know, I think sometimes when we are developing a mindfulness practice, it can inadvertently heighten anxiety or depression. And we realize, okay, you know, I need more than this resource. So not to hesitate to reach out for help. And early intervention in terms of mental health is critical to really to really fostering better emotional and physical well-being. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's no shame in reaching out for help. I think we've all needed help at certain points during the last couple of years.
Definitely.
So to know that help is available.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's key, is don't be afraid to ask for help, right? That's so important.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. And you're not alone in that.
Well, Shaila, thank you for being with us again. Congratulations on your new daughter, by the way.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
She's a little mindfulness teacher herself.
I'll bet yeah. She is. Talking about observing everything, it's got to be amazing. So,
yeah.
Well, we'll have you back again in a few months. And again, thank you for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
We've been talking with Shaila Merghain. She is a distinguished psychologist in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation at the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We'll be right back to talk about menopause.